Text 7. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Duhitrir dashuttara shatam. Pitri matri ya sakskarihi. Shilaudharya gunopeta. Pauranjanya prajapati. Duitrir dashottarashatam. Pitri matri yashaskarihi. Shilaudharya gunopeta. Auranjanya prajapate. Vaishnavis, translation word by word. Duvitri, daughters. Dasha Uttara, 10 more than that. Oh, sorry, 10 more than. Shatam, 100. Pitri, like the father. Matri, and mother. Yashaskarihi, glorify. Shila, good behavior. Audharya, magnanimity. Guna, good qualities. Upetaha, possessed of. Pauranjanya, daughters of Puranjana. Prajapate, oh Prajapate. Translation, O Prajapati, King Prachina Bharishat. In this way, King Puranjan also begat 110 daughters. And all of these were equally glorified like the father and mother. Their behavior was gentle and they possessed magnanimity and other good qualities. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Children begotten under the rules and regulations of the scriptures generally become as good as the father and mother. But children born illegitimately mainly become Varna Sankara. The Varna Sankara population is irresponsible to the family, community, and even to themselves. Formerly, the Varna Sankara population was checked by the observation of the reformatory method called Garbhadhan Samskara, a child begetting religious ceremony. In this verse we find that although King Puranjan had begotten so many children, they were not Varna Sankara. All of them were good, well-behaved children, and they had good qualities like the father and mother. Even though we may produce many good children, our desire for sex that is beyond the prescribed method is to be considered sinful. Too much enjoyment of any of the senses, not only sex, results in sinful activities. Therefore, one has to become a swami or goswami at the end of his life. One may beget children up to the age of 50, but after 50, one must stop begetting children and should accept the vanaprastha order. In this way, he must leave home and then become a sannyasi. A sannyasi's title is Swami or Goswami, which means that he completely refrains from sense enjoyment. One should not accept the sannyasa order whimsically. He must be fully confident that he can restrain his desires for sense gratification. King Puranjana's family life was, of course, very happy. As mentioned in these verses, he begot 1,100 sons and 110 daughters. Everyone desires to have more sons than daughters. And since the number of daughters was less than the number of sons, it appears that King Puranjan's family life was very comfortable and pleasing. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Putri Shivade Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gurvam Pacharne Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Pancha Kalpatru Vishagri Vasindhu Vishagri Antoyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Translation again, if you like to repeat. O Prajapati, King Prachina Bharishat. In this way, King Puranjan also begot 110 daughters. All of these were equally glorified, like the father and mother. Their behavior was gentle, and they possessed magnanimity and other good qualities. Today is Srila Prabhupada's birthday by solar calculations. He was born on 1st September 1996. That is 116 years ago. What did I say? Sorry. 1896, and so is the 116th birthday today by solar calculation. Srila Prabhupada explained several times that there's no difference between a son or a daughter and a disciple. There are many points of commonality, of similarity. For instance, in the Krishna book, chapter 85, Srila Prabhupada says, it is a Vedic custom that the junior members of the family should offer respects to the elders every morning. The children or disciples especially should offer their respects to their parents or spiritual master in the morning. So I'm sure all the children in Mayapur do that. In the morning they go to their parents and offer their respect. I'm sure, so I don't need to comment much on that. But the idea is that there is a similarity, there is a parallelism here. That there is, of course, Vedic culture is a culture of respect. We are familiar with the respect that disciple needs to offer the guru. But sometimes, depending on different backgrounds, we may or may not be totally familiar with the respect a child should offer to the parents. We come from different parts of the world. Some of us may come from a culture which promotes the type of respect. Some of us may come from other places where that respect is much less or even lacking. But we need to understand that the culture Srila Prabhupada presented, there is basically a son or a disciple is the same. There is a lecture that Srila Prabhupada gave in 1971 on Isopanishad. I read because it's a bit technical, but I think it's relevant. Formerly, the spiritual master, the disciplic succession, there are two ways. One is called Shaukra, and another is called Sautra. Shaukra means succession from the seminal, just like son. Son is born up by the seminal, and the disciple is born by Vedic knowledge. So the one family-wise is called Shaukra. Shukra means seminal, coming from the Shukra, and the other is Sautra, by hearing. So spiritual master in India, still there are Gotras. There is no difference between Putra and Chatra. Putra means son, and Chatra means disciple. Chanakya Pandit said, Putrams cha, Shishams cha. They are equally treated, both of them equally eligible for hereditary rights from the person, either his son or disciple. In fact, I noticed in India, in the jurisprudence of India, in the legal system, sometimes they accept as legal a relation like father and son between disciple and guru. I saw passports of Indian devotees that say son of, and they put their guru there. It seems it's accepted. I don't know. Is it true? Any Indian devotee can confirm? Huh? Srila Prabhupada? Okay, even Srila Prabhupada passport say father Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. Well, it seems that they accept, at least they issue the passport. So there is this thing that disciples are like, in fact, they're called God brothers, brothers in God, divine brothers, divine sisters. And they should be also respectful among each other. There is a story in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam when Yajnavalkya, a disciple of Vaishampayana Muni, he became a little proud. And he told Vaishampayana, what these other disciples of yours would do, I'll do these special austerities. They're a little feeble, they're a little weak. So what these weaklings would do? So then the spiritual master became very angry. And he called them, you offender of the Brahmanas. He said, now you have to get out of here. And not only that, you have to give back every single knowledge you have received from me. So then Yajnavalkya vomited, that's what it says, vomited all the mantras of the Yajurvedas. Yajurveda. He vomited all these mantras and he left the ashram. So all the God brothers, explain in the purport, I think by Sridhar Maharaj, Sridhar Swami, that because a Brahmana cannot eat somebody else's vomit, it's not proper. So they took the form of birds, partridge, titira. So therefore, they came as birds and they eagerly took all these mantras God brother had puked. So then, and therefore, that particular part of the Vedas is called Taittiriya Samhita, because it was processed through these titiras, whatever. But Vidyananda Maharaj, who wrote that purport, said that just as a father is disturbed when one son mistreats the father's other children, the spiritual master is very displeased if a proud disciple insults or mistreats the guru's other disciples. Self-explanatory. It's like a family. The guru sees the relations. He's happy if the disciples are harmoniously living together, collaborating. And they're very unhappy if the disciples are not. Once Srila Prabhupada even said, he saw something not pleasant, and once Srila Prabhupada said, at least the disciple, my guru, started fighting after he left, but you are fighting even while I'm still present. But of course, he was also very happy, very, very happy with his disciples in general. There is a beautiful letter I wanted to share. This is a letter to Satswarup and Uddhava. This is July 1970. My dear Satswarupa and Uddhava, you are all my children, and I love my American boys and girls who are sent to me by my spiritual master, and I have accepted them as my disciples. So you're all my children, and I love my Americans, boys and girls. We are very happy to have some of these Americans, boys and girls, right here in Mayapur, like Ganagamya Prabhu Ki Jai, Ragatmika Prabhu Ki Jai. Anybody else here? Huh? What? Americans, only Americans. Of course. Of course. I'm just quoting this letter. I'm sure Srila Prabhupada loves all his children, and also Canadians, Europeans, and Australians, and also grandchildren, African grandchildren, I'm sure. There's another thing I wanted to share. Lilamrita. This is from San Francisco, 1967. As you know, at that time there was a lot of intimacy. The exchanges with Srila Prabhupada, the devotees were there, were like daily. Sometimes he would cook, teach things, teach Mridanga things. So there's a testimonial from Janaki. Janaki was the wife of Mukunda Maharaj before he took sannyas. So this is her recollection. Janaki. There were a group of us sitting around in Swamiji's apartment, and I asked him if he had any children. He looked at me as if I had said something strange, and he said, "You're not my child?" I said, "Well, yes." And he said, "Are not all these my children?" And his answer was so quick that I never doubted that he seriously meant what he said. So when Janaki asked Prabhupada, "Do you have any children?" He was like, "What the fuck? I mean, you are here, you are my children." So this thing of the child say biological child and the disciple, it's the same. It's the same. It's really the same. It's both part of the Vatsalya Bhav, the Vatsalya Rasa. In English, there is the expression father figure or mother figure. In other words, somebody who may not be the father in the biological sense or even in the legal sense, but is the father figure in the sense that is the person the child looks up to as a parent, as a guardian, as a protector, as a guide, as a senior shelter. And it's very common. And sometimes that relation is more important than the real father or mother. Sometimes, because of course the father and mother have departed, but even sometimes when the mother and father are alive, sometimes another relation is more important. So these relations are very, sometimes very complicated, because of course each person has got their own gunas, each person has got their own karma, and each of us has got parents. We didn't maybe necessarily choose them, at least the biological parents. We're born there out of the arrangement of the Lord. He brought us in some womb, in some family, in some country, and we're born there. We have some parents. Some of us are very happy with the parents. Some of us are very unhappy with the parents. Some of us, generally everybody has got some mixed feelings. There's certain things we like, certain things we don't like. Of course, there is also the fact that psychologically, and I mean psychologically, the psychology of the conditioned soul is as such that we always want to be the center of the universe. And sometimes in children, that feeling is unrestrained because there's not much rationality. So sometimes we see when small children, like 2-3 years old, sometimes they fight among themselves, and sometimes they're completely ruthless. One child cries, "That's my toy, that's my toy," yeah. And the other person grabs the toy and just, it doesn't care. The other person is crying, "Ah," just doesn't care. Sometimes children are quite ruthless. Because again, there's not yet the filter of socialization, of civilization, we could say. Narada Muni in the seventh canto says that children are very similar to animals. It's a fact. Especially before all these samskaras, Navidyaramba, before being educated, they're quite wild. So that the idea is that, like in Bhagavad Gita, it says, that everybody is born in the duality of Icha and Dvesha, desire and hatred. What is that? Icha Dvesha Samuttena Dvandva Mohena Bharata. Dvandva Mohena. We are all born in this deep illusion of duality. Icha Dvesha. Something I like, something I don't like. And as children, very naturally, we project that Icha Dvesha on our parents. We would like our parents to be always there for us, or just do whatever we like them to do, or to be the way we like them to be. But it's just not like that. First of all, they're doing their best. They also struggle. Of course, when we are later adults, we realize they were not just there for us. Like it was like a 24-hour job. They had other things to do. They had the challenges in life. Mental, external, social, sometimes health challenges. But somehow, as children, very often we become very, very hurt. Very hurt if we don't get what we want or immediately what we want. And that projects into the relation. But they were doing what they could, the best they could, within a network of other responsibilities. Maybe we had brothers and sisters. Maybe we had, maybe they had other problems, economic problems and other things. So they did what they could, and we got what we got, and we didn't get what we got. We didn't get what we didn't get. So we kind of need to move along. But this relation with the parents does influence very much. And sometimes it may even influence our relation with our guru, because we project as a father figure. Maybe we have a very bad relation with the father, so we tend to not trust father figure. So we scrutinize the guru. Why he did that? Why he said that? Why he didn't say that? Why he didn't give me enough attention? This is a very common thing. It's a very common thing. Why the guru didn't give me enough attention? It's all a result of this type of traumas and things like that. So there is a duty to be respectful. That's Vedic civilization. You respect your elders. You may not be fully, surrendered to them if they're not Krishna conscious, if they cannot give you the highest knowledge or information, but you respect them. Traditionally, the son massages the legs of the father, takes care and all that. Like that. That's at the same time, of course, we also know that the parents have a responsibility. There is that famous verse that says, "Guru nasyatsya." One should not become a guru. One who cannot deliver his dependence from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipable demigod. So this is a very strong verse by Rishabhadeva, because it gives some categories which we generally may not think of our deliverers, husband, father, mother. But Rishabhadeva is very strict. You cannot take that position if you cannot deliver the children from the birth and death. So one may think, what does it mean exactly, deliver? How a father delivers the son or the daughter? How a mother delivers the son and the daughter? They have them for a few years under their control, under their jurisdiction, and then they walk away. 16, 18, 20, 25, 30. But then they walk away. So how can the father or mother guarantee they will be liberated? The answer is that they cannot guarantee, but they at least they need to offer the instruments for the deliverance. Like Srila Prabhupada, some children were very pious. There's a child, now he's an old man, but what's his name? Vrindavan Day, still alive? He's in Calcutta, right? Sometime he comes to Mayapur, you see him sitting near Srila Prabhupada Vyasasan. He's kind of pious gentleman. But there was also the other one that he tried to steal the whole ISKCON, because he went to the court and he said to the judge, "Look, ISKCON belongs to my father, and my father now is gone, deceased. And I'm the first son. All the properties of ISKCON belong to me." And you may laugh, but it was not a laughing matter. For years, they had to fight in the court. And finally, ISKCON won. They accepted the fact that when you are a sannyasi, you cut the relation with your family. So whatever you do as a sannyasi doesn't have to necessarily go to your children. But it was a great struggle. So even Srila Prabhupada, we could say, quote unquote, could not deliver his own son. But what does it mean? It means that he did his duty. He gave a Krishna conscious environment. We are sure he gave Krishna conscious instructions and direction and example. But then they didn't take it. Even in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find that Advaita Acharya himself, is Vishnu himself, Narayana himself, He had 6 sons. 3 were great devotees and 3 were impersonalists. So when this verse says the father or the mother must deliver, means they have to do their best to provide, to equip the children with information, guidance, example, and then it's up to the children. But at least they have done their work. Let me check if I have something else for you. Okay, the last point I want to make is that just like in a biological sense, the children become also fathers at their own pace. Now they grow up, they get married, and they themselves have children. Similarly, within the spiritual family, disciples at one point, at one stage of their development, should become spiritual masters. Ideally, all the disciples should become gurus. Some of them may accept formally the role of Diksha Guru, initiating disciples. And some of them may not, but still they should be sheltered. They should be a point of reference for the younger devotees. They should give guidance. They should be Shiksha Gurus. Srila Prabhupada wanted very much this. Wanted that his disciples become gurus, acharyas. There is a lecture he gave here in Mayapur. It was a lecture on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita in 1975, just downstairs. And he says, don't become premature acharya. First of all, follow the orders of acharya. And you become mature, then it is better to become acharya, because we are interested in preparing acharya. Then he says, and to become acharya is not very difficult. So one who is spreading Krishna Upadesh, Krishna's instructions, simply repeat what is said by Krishna, then you become acharya. Not difficult at all. And then he concludes, almost concludes, so we want to spread Krishna consciousness. Simply prepare yourself how to repeat Krishna's instructions very nicely without any malinterpretation. Then in future, suppose you have got now 10,000, we shall expand to 100,000. That is required. Then 100,000 to 1,000,000, and 1,000,000 to 10,000,000 devotees. Jai! Srila Prabhupada says, so there will be no scarcity of acharya. There shouldn't be scarcity of acharyas. So if all the disciples of Srila Prabhupada take this role, there's no scarcity. Now there is a little scarcity of acharyas, of gurus. Sometimes some countries they don't have even one resident guru. There is a little scarcity. There are many, many people coming to Krishna consciousness, and we don't have many, many gurus. But anyway, that's different. Now, last point I want to share, because we are talking about sons and daughters. So there is a famous letter, 1969, a letter to Hamsadutta. So early letter, 69. And Srila Prabhupada was talking about this examinations, like Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava. And he says, when we pass this other examination, one will pass this examination, will be awarded with the title of Bhakti Vedanta. At that time, Bhaktivedanta was a bit easier. It was 4 books, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, which in 69 was basically only the first canto, maybe second canto, but basically the first 2 cantos, So Bhagavad Gita, first couple of cantos, teaching of Lord Chaitanya and nectar of devotion. One who will pass this examination will be awarded with the title of Bhaktivedanta. So now it's much more difficult. You got to Bhakti Shastri, you got Bhagavad Gita, his Upanishad, Nectar of Instruction, and the 19th chapter of Nectar of Devotion, first 19th chapter. Then of course Bhakti Vaibhava, the first six cantos. And to go back to be Bhaktivedanta, you also have to finish all 12 cantos. But anyway, so now Srila Prabhupada says, I want that all my spiritual sons and daughters will inherit the title of Bhaktivedanta, so that the family transcendental diploma will continue through the generations. Those possessing the title of Bhaktivedanta will be allowed to initiate disciples. Maybe by 1975, I mean 6 years later, maybe by 1975, all of my disciples will be allowed to initiate and increase the numbers of the generations. That is my program. Srila Prabhupada ki. Generations. You see, even it's the same word. Now, like we say biological generations, so there are spiritual generations. And his plan was that all his disciples would start initiating. All the sons and daughters who get Bhakti Vedanta. So thank you for your attention. Any question or comment?
Yeah, it is said that Puranjana's family was very comfortable and pleasing. Maybe that's why he did not leave home, because it's also said that a bad son is a boon to the father.
A bad son,
yeah,
is a boon to the father. Father.
It helped the father to leave home and not to be attached to the family. If a man has a bad son, it helps him not to be attached to the son, so he can leave home. Here, Puranjana, his family is so comfortable and pleasing, nobody was bad. Maybe that's why he didn't leave home.
So is it comments, a question, is both? Oh, it's a question. What's it? So you're saying maybe it's better to have a bad son? Huh? Well, it's true. See, first of all, there is a difference between frustration and detachment. They're not the same. Somebody may have a son who's really a pain in the neck, maybe a drug addict, really bad son. Steals from home, bad. But doesn't mean they become detached. Doesn't mean the father takes sannyas, the mother becomes a widow, something. We don't see that happening. So, being frustrated with the son is not a guarantee of detachment. Because again, detachment and frustration are two different things. If one is simply, sometimes you see that these parents who have a bad son, they always think about the bad son. Right? They always talk, oh, my son did this and did that, and he got involved in this and he got involved in that. What can we do? It's not that they become detached. Sometimes they become more attached. They become more absorbed. Because he's a good son, okay? He's married, he has his children, very nice, we go see them, but you don't have to worry about them. But sometimes bad son, that they become completely absorbed. So it's not necessarily boon and not necessarily an instrument for detachment, not necessarily. But if one is a devotee, he will take anything that happens, good son, bad son, as a stimulus to advance, a stimulus to become grateful to the Lord. Like Narada Muni was 5 years old, he had only the mother, and the mother died because one cobra or some snake bit her, and he felt, this is the mercy of the Lord. Not because he hated the mother, but because he felt this was my only attachment, and therefore now I'm free. And in fact, he started traveling all over the world. So depending on the nature of the person, It may take different situations to enhance their spiritual life and their dependence on God and their detachment from the material world. But not that every child who as 5-year-old loses the mother becomes Naradamuni. Sometimes they become some dysfunctional members of society. Very morose, very resentful. So it's not a rule. So a devotee, when something happens, a bad son comes, a devotee will say, okay, this, no, I understand there's no happiness in this world. I have to pay this karma. This son came to me to give me some pain. Hare Krishna. But not everybody is like that. It's not automatic. That's my answer. Anything else? Yes. Charulochan Prabhu from Mexico City. First time in Mayapur. Hare Bol.
Hare Krishna. This is at my humble obeisances. En español o en inglés? En español o en inglés?
Como quieres.
Bueno. Sometimes happens that son comes more developed, spiritual developed, than the father.
Sometimes it happens the son develops more spiritually than the father.
Yes.
Yes.
And then what happens? Which kind of relationship is going to establish in that family?
Oh, okay. So what happens, what kind of relation is established in the family if the son is more advanced than the father? Well, if the father is enlightened and is wise, He should take his son as he should listen to his son. Definitely. There is that story, help me out on this. There is that story with, who's that, Shivananda Sena and Kavi Karnapura? What's that? Mukunda and? Oh, Raghunanda. Oh, yes, yes. So Lord there was Mukunda Prabhu, associate of Lord Chaitanya, and his son was Raghunandan, the famous Raghunanda, the deity, ate the sweet rice. The story, Raghunandan, the one who... The father told him, okay, do the puja, do the offering of the boga, no? And make sure that Krishna eats. So that Raghunandan was a small child, in his innocence, really expected Krishna to eat. And then he was really praying, please eat, because he was seeing the plate there after the offering, nothing would happen. So he said, Krishna, please eat, my father told me you should eat, please eat. Then Krishna really personally take the food and eat. And there was no maha left, because Krishna really ate, physically put it in his mouth. So then that's happened every day. Then the father came back. And the father said, is Krishna eating? Yeah, the mother said, yeah, but he's eating all the maha. But no, it's Krishna's eating. They said, I don't believe. Then finally, there was this very hot, sweet rice. And the father, correct me if I'm wrong, but the father kind of hid himself behind the curtain and wanted to see. Now let's see if it's true or if my son really steals all the maha, he just eats everything. And then he says, Krishna's eating. So then the child was doing the offering. Please Krishna eat. And then Krishna took Krishna's hand, went to the sweet rice, it was very hot. And the father jumped out of the curtain. So Krishna also got afraid. What's that? And so the sweet rice burned Krishna's hand. So I believe that deity still has got the burn. What's got? What has got? Huh? Laddu. Oh, laddu. Anyway, I mean, you get the idea. More or less. I mean, don't quote me exactly, but more or less that's the idea. So you get the concept. So then, so this Raghunanda was very, very advanced of Krishna is eating because he's asking. So one day Lord Chaitanya told, they were there, said, Mukunda, but who is the son and who is the father? Is you are the father, Raghunanda is the father, who is the father, who is the son? And Mukunda admitted, no, Raghunandan actually is the father. I am his son. Because he realized that he was more advanced, or at least he recognized that he was more advanced. So the relation would be that the father will respect the son, will listen to the son. At the same time, of course, the son will also respect the father. It's not that the son will accept certain external symptoms of respect, like the son probably won't allow the father to wash his feet or to massage his feet because he's still the father. So there will be a beautiful kind of competition, who serves the other. Okay? Should we close here? It's time to finish. 9 o'clock we can go. Anyway, if you need to go, please feel free. We have another contribution.
Hare Krishna, thank you, Prabhu. You made a distinction between frustration and detachment. Now, how do we understand the example of Srila Prabhupada, who he confessed or he said publicly that he didn't want to leave his family, but he left it out of frustration, out of utter frustration, even though his girls were in young age and the father is not supposed to leave so early before the daughter is married, but he was so frustrated he left. And then also sometime later in Mathura he had some dreams of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati urging him to take sannyas. And then he also confessed that I didn't want to take sannyas. Something to the effect that he didn't feel ready or that he was attached, of course, you know, we understand it's his humility. But at the same time, I have a feeling that Prabhupada really meant this, that he really felt like that he felt frustrated and that he felt he wasn't ready for sannyas or he didn't want to take sannyas, and that he did that to fulfill the order of his guru in his dream. So could you comment on that?
I'll try.
The acharya is the acharya frustrated and attached?
Okay, my answer is that frustration and detachment are not the same, but they're not mutually exclusive. In other words, you can be detached and also frustrated. And that frustration may be the uddipana, what do you call it in English? The catalyst for the detachment to manifest. See, Srila Prabhupada, as what we learn from Lilamrita, he was never that attached or attracted to this wife, Radharani Devi. No? She was not. In fact, when he was young, he just got this marriage done, and he didn't like this lady very much. But of course, he was dutiful and, you know, very, very dharmic. But he told the father, I would like to marry another wife. Two wives, because this one I don't really like. So the father preached to him and said, well, actually, it's good that if you're not too attached to your wife, because this will be good for detachment, for renunciation later on. And Srila Prabhupada listened, and he liked the idea. He said, yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. So already, even from a observable point of view, there was already a degree of detachment. And of course, this degree of detachment manifested by the fact that obviously Srila Prabhupada was giving his best time to the mission of his spiritual master. No? He was preaching, he was bringing people home and this and that. And the ladies still didn't want to participate. She was also devotee of Krishna and everything, but she wasn't in that mood of preaching. And she was becoming contaminated, like the rest of India, with bad habits like tea drinking. And then we know the story. At one point, he took Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavatam with all the commentaries of the acharyas. And she swapped for tea biscuits. Then that was the proverbial stroke that broke the camel's ass, or the proverbial drop that makes the glass overflow. You know, that was that. That's too much. So it was a build up. It was a build up, and then that's it. That's not acceptable. I can't live with somebody who swaps my Bhagavad Gita for some tea biscuits. Everything else he would tolerate, but that he couldn't tolerate. But Bhagavad Gita is Krishna. Like, can you imagine somebody, you go back to your home, you have deities, and what happened to the deities? Oh, well, you know, I swapped them for some Britannia biscuits, you know, we are running out of biscuits. So, you know, can you imagine that? You're crazy, you know, you're crazy. As far as the daughters and this and that, those families were kind of extended families. There was always somebody who would take care of them. So he did not just leave them in poverty. And in fact, we can see even when he, in this final will in Vrindavan, which was signed in June 1977, even in this final will, Srila Prabhupada gave 1,000 rupees a month to his previous wife until she died. Of course, 1,000 rupees now is not much, but in 77 was a good allowance. 1,000 rupees was a good allowance. We could live peacefully. So, in other words, it doesn't appear he was irresponsible in any way. I think at that time he also had grown-up sons. And when the father is not around, the son take care. No? Take care not only of the mother, but take care of the sister. So he felt it's a good time, it's a sign. Hare Krishna. And as far as the sannyas, of course those are internal feelings. I'm not qualified to really delve into it. We could make a parallel that there for Srila Prabhupada taking sannyas mean it's not just a sannyas in the sense of celibacy or whatever, using the body, mind and words in the service of God. Meaning also a very, very austere life. Because at that time he was on himself. Right now, if you take sannyas, generally in ISKCON, means it's almost like you be take care. It means easier for a sannyasi to be taken care. You get generally more facilities than other people do. At least, you know, you show up in some temple, they give you a place to stay and something to eat. Generally. At that time, I don't think it was really like that for Srila Prabhupada. So it means really very austere. And that's kind of maybe the sense of finality. It's done. Because he understood sannyas is a serious thing. So this is my answer to many of the complex questions that you ask.
It's a very good answer.
Thank you. Okay, so okay, last question or comment, and then
just call it a day. Short comment, because we can see also that in our history, in Bhagavatam, Vidura, he was also a great soul, and he also utilized the frustration as an impetus to give up certain material situations.
Thank you. Good point. Yes. So again, frustration, detachment, they don't have to be mutually exclusive. There may be a basic sense of detachment, attachment to Krishna, but then there is something happen, and really like that's a stimulant, the catalyst of saying, okay, it's time for me to move on to a different phase. If there is not detachment, if there is only frustration, then people do, like in ISKCON in the early days, many people took sannyas because they were unhappy with the wife, they were fighting with the wife, then they took sannyas, but then they went back to some other wife. They went to, so that was just frustration without the detachment. But detachment, sometimes a little spice of frustration, it makes detachment manifest. Just like when you eat a meal, you have, say, khichdi, and some of us, not me, but some of us like to put chilies, no? So it enhances the experience of the khichdi. But you cannot just eat khichdi. You cannot just eat chilies. So that frustration is a little bit like a chili. It's like something, you have the detachment, means you have the attachment for Krishna, and then that chili stimulates maybe the digestion of that detachment. But if you only eat chili, you don't, you know, just burn your stomach. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.